everybody can have a seat.
Here
on the Malco matter versus, somebody help me with that. Woldy Johannes from Stiglitz. You understand? It looks harder than it is. Okay, Woldy Johannes. Council, are you ready to proceed? All right, Council, you ready? All right, excellent. Come on. Would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
2 minutes, Justice Stiglitz.
All right, certainly.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Tamer Botros, and I represent Malco Enterprises of Nevada, Inc., doing business as Budget Car Rental of Las Vegas in this matter. On August 10th, 2005, Congress passed the Safe, Accountable, Flexible, Efficient Transportation Equity Act of 2005. Within that act, it included a provision, 49 United States Code 30106, referred to, also known as the Graves Amendment, which provides for rental car companies who operate, they shall not be liable for the renter's negligence during that rental period, with few limited exceptions. Criminal wrongdoing or negligence. Apart from those two very limited exceptions, the Graves Amendment operates to preempt state laws that previously had held that rental car companies are vicariously liable for the renter's negligence. The Supremacy Clause of the United States Constitution, Article 6, Clause 2, sets out that federal laws are the supreme laws of the land and for states to abide by those laws. In this particular case, in 1967, in Nevada, prior to the Graves Amendment, the state legislature passed NRS 482.305, which basically, prior to August 10, 2005, held that if you are a short-term lessor, a rental car company, and the short-term lessee gets involved in an accident, you are automatically vicariously liable every time for each individual accident, regardless of whether the short-term lessor was at fault or not. It was automatic. The Graves Amendment was passed to preempt state laws like NRS 482.305. This case is unique in the sense it's a case of first impression here in this honorable court in the state of Nevada. Why? Because there's never been a case pertaining to NRS 482.305 that directly talks about its being preempted by a federal statute that has been upheld. As we cited in the brief, the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals in 2009 in Garcia versus Vanguard handled that very similar issue. And what did they hold? Well, they held that the Graves Amendment is a constitutional. Furthermore, that it does preempt state laws that seek to hold rail car companies vicariously liable, either through financial responsibility laws or otherwise, meaning insurance law. In that particular case, it dealt with Florida's Dangerous Instrumentalities Act, which basically held if you're a rental car company and you own the vehicle, you are liable up to a certain amount. Garcia versus Vanguard stepped in and said, the Graves Amendment doesn't say anything about limited, capped liability. It simply says that the rental car companies cannot be held liable for the renter's negligence.
What about the savings clause, counsel?
Just think which the savings clause is very important. What does it talk about? It talks about nothing in the Graves Amendment, subsection A, prevents a state, such as Nevada, for requiring these rental car companies to make sure, what is the provision, subsection B? For the privilege of registering and operating a motor vehicle. What is it talking about? Registration with whom? Nevada Department of Motor Vehicles in the state of Nevada. It talks about making sure that just because subsection A prevents a rental car company from being liable for the renter's negligence does not mean they can't register the vehicle. They can make sure it's insured because it has to be insured in order to operate on Nevada motor highways. However, it's very clear when you look at the savings clause, Justice DeGwidge, with NRS 482.295. Why? Because NRS 482.295 states out and sets exactly what needs to occur for a rental car company lawfully to operate in the state of Nevada and what they have to show. What is that? They have to make sure it's registered. They have to make sure that they have evidence of insurance. In this case, it is permitted under Nevada law for self-insurance. For what? To cover what? Damages of him or her, referring to the entity, the company that actually owns the rental car fleet. It doesn't refer specifically or in any way to insure renter's negligence. If it did, then we would not be having this type of conversation because that is entirely different. It talks about making sure that that rental car company has the ability to pay judgments for what? Not for the renter's negligence, for its own negligence. So what does that mean in terms of the rental car company's negligence? When employees are operating those vehicles on Nevada roadways, they are insured. Those employees, when they get in accidents, the Graves Amendment does not apply. When the rental car agency rents a vehicle in contravention of Nevada law, meaning they don't confirm and verify the driver's license, they can be held liable for negligent entrustment. That is outside of the Graves Amendment. With respect to maintaining the vehicle, if a rental car gets in an accident and it is shown that the reason why it was caused, the accident occurred, is because failure to maintain a vehicle, whether brakes or otherwise, that is outside of the scope of the Graves Amendment. The Savings Clause, Justice Stiglitz, was there to make sure that the entire country knows that these state laws for registering and making sure that those vehicles are operating on roadways insured still remain in place.
But in Hall, didn't we indicate that there's an indemnification piece to this coverage?
Justice Stiglitz, as we mentioned in our brief and in the reply, Hall was filed in 2003. It was briefed, argued. It was submitted on May 18, 2005. The Graves Amendment passed after, on August 10, 2005. There was no way the litigants in Hall could ever argue or would have any standing to argue a statute, a federal statute no less, that hadn't yet been enacted. Our position, Justice Stiglitz, is that Hall has been preempted. Why? Because when it was argued, briefed, submitted on May 18th, 2005, the Graves Amendment was not yet passed. On August 10th, 2005, it changed the landscape. Why? Because now you had a federal law that is in place after the Hall decision, which, by the way, was published sometime in June or July of 2006. So our position, Justice Stiglitz, is that Hall has been preempted by 49 USC 30106. We point out that NRS 482.305 is not a financial responsibility, as respondents have argued. Why? It is a strict vicarious liability statute that basically states you are liable for the rental's negligence regardless of whether you're at fault or not. It doesn't matter. Our position is after August 2005, that has changed. If it wasn't for, and I will submit, for August 10th, 2005, the Graves Amendment passing, we would not have any authority or any, quite frankly, leg to stand on. Why? Because we wouldn't have a federal statute saying that we, my clients, shall not be liable for the negligence of renters, which is what 482.305 specifically states, and not only that, states that for every single accident, regardless of fault, the rental car company is at fault and they must pay, regardless. In this case, it's on point here of this very important first case impression. Why? Here in the state of Nevada. The driver operated the vehicle under the influence, got in an accident, fled the scene. We get into litigation. Respondents sue the rental car company and the driver, and they pursue a default judgment against the driver and apply it to my client.
Counsel, were the listed drivers shown to be insured separately? I looked on the record for that, and I didn't just see evidence that they provided insurance when they rented the car.
Just because what I can tell you is I don't know the full extent of that. This was obviously prior to my time. However, here is what I'll say. There is no Nevada law. There's no federal law that requires a rental agency to verify, confirm, and decide whether or not to rent a vehicle to somebody if they fail to show proper insurance.
But they have to have the vehicle insured to be on the road.
100% Justice Stiglitz. However, the vehicle being insured on the road is for what purpose? Our position is for the purpose to cover the damages and liability pursuant to the Graves Amendment in terms of the rental car company's negligence.
But why isn't it, I mean, the peculiar thing in this case is the judgment was less than the statutory requirements for vehicular insurance, correct? I mean, the judge imposes not more than 25,000 personal injury and not 20,000 property. So it didn't go into strict vicarious liability over and above the amounts of the minimums, right?
So just figuring what I'll say is NRS 482.305 says that the rental car company's automatically liable for the, correct, the 25, 50, 20 minimum financial responsibility. In this particular case, when it goes in front of an arbitrator, he finds in favor of the respondent, but has no liability against Malco, my client. It's all against the DUI driver. So there was no basis to find liability for against my client except for NRS 482.305, which is in direct contravention with federal law, because subject to federal law, with the two exceptions, either negligence on the rental car company or criminal wrongdoing.
That's in the first section, but the second section has a savings clause for mandatory insurance that is not met.
Justice Pickering, the savings clause does have mandatory insurance requirements. Our position is that is for the purposes of the rental car company's liability, their own negligence, their own employees, their own conduct, not for the conduct of the renters, because if that was the case.
Well, but what about an ordinary, and I'm probably revealing some lack of knowledge here, but my car insurance, if I loan it to somebody and they drive it and they get in a wreck, my insurance would apply to it.
Correct, Justice Biggering, but you're not a rental car operator. My client has federal protection and immunity from that legal liability you mentioned, because why? And subsection A is very important. The entity has to be in the business of actually leasing or renting vehicles, number one. Number two, it cannot have criminal wrongdoing or negligence. So in your example,
if I find in this that you had a valid certificate, your client, the findings, I don't know what the evidence is because the record's odd, but in paragraph 15 of the court's findings, that defendant Malco disclosed that their rental agreement and valid certificate of self-insurance pursuant to 495-290 and 482-295. So Malco self-insured at the time it presents to the rental company. So why is it not acting as an insurer for purposes of the statutory minimums that it said it was self-insured for?
Excellent question, Justice Biggering, because it's not an insurance company. It's self-insured for what? for the negligence of its own employees, for its own conduct, not for the conduct of the renters. NRS 482.295 has no mention about a mandate requiring that it has insurance for registration purposes for the renters. None. I'll reserve the balance of my time.
All right, thank you, Council. Kane?
I'm actually Mr. Jonathan Hilton. I'm appearing pro hack VJ.
All right, welcome.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jonathan Hilton, appearing for the accident victim, Mr. Woldy Yohannes. Your Honors, when Representative Graves stood before Congress, he was asked by Representative Nadler whether the Graves Amendment that he was proposing would preempt the laws of 15 states, Nevada's included. And his response to that was that protecting state minimum financial insurance is what the carve-out provision is for. That's what the savings clause was for. He wrote it so that there would always be recourse, and those are his words. He said there would always be recourse for an accident victim in the form of those state minimum insurance laws. That's the purpose of the savings clause. And I want to go to your point, Justice Pickering, about Malco in this case is acting as an insurer. Malco is a self-insurer here. Malco has a qualm about being held liable, what it's calling being called vicariously liable for those state minimum insurance requirements here. But what's actually going on is that Malco has chosen to self-insure. It's taken advantage of those provisions in the code that allow for self-insurance, and it has to be held to the same standards as any other insurance company. If you or I were to have a car in Nevada, and we just as normal citizens, as individuals, lent our car to another person, and there was an accident, then our insurance would be on the hook for those state minimums. It's no different for rental car companies. If a rental car company lends a car to someone out there, then the state minimum insurance law, which is applying evenly to everyone, is going to hold that rental car company responsible for those state minimums.
But the exception that 482.305 doesn't hit that point so much as it seems to say if you have no insurance at all and you're not self-insured, you can be liable, sky's the limit, for not having the minimum insurance. I mean, a literal reading of our 482.305, it's a very odd statute.
Yes, Your Honor, and 2 points to that. So one, in the 2017 unpublished case Stevens, which I do cite in my brief, this court actually limited the application of that unlimited joint and several liability and said as long as the rental car company is able to provide those funds up to the state minimums, we're only going to hold it vicariously liable up to those minimums. So that is a gloss that this court has put on the statute. But the second point that I would raise is, honestly,
that gloss then puts it squarely within the savings clause to the Graves Amendment, right? I mean, because what they're saying is they're securing the minimum vehicle insurance that's required in case that vehicle hurts someone else.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Stevens, looking at that, requires that it fit within the savings clause, because if you're reading the debates and you're reading the congressional intent behind that savings clause, which the savings clause doesn't define what a financial responsibility law is, so it is appropriate to turn to that legislative history. Representative Graves was clear that state minimum insurance laws up to those minimums would always be available.
Well, the lack of a definition doesn't necessarily take you to legislative history, but what in the language of the Graves savings clause subpart the 6B2, I mean, it seems to me financial liability insurance requirements under state law would be the minimums that are required by 295, by the statute on that's generally applicable, the minimums.
Correct, Your Honor, and that's why B2 applies as a savings clause. I would refer to the notice of supplemental authorities that we filed last week. We actually, in preparation for oral argument, found a case that we had overlooked where a federal court had actually examined 482.305 and had examined this court's analysis in Howe. And what the federal court concluded was that this was a financial responsibility statute. The case is Lancer versus Malco. And in that case, Malco was attempting the same argument where they said, well, look, we do have this certificate of insurance. There is a certificate of insurance. And the federal court said, no, you can't just comply with one part of Nevada's financial responsibility laws. This court in Howe, en banc, looked to the statutory framework as a whole. And the federal court said, there's no preemption here because if you read all of the statutes together, we're just talking about holding Malco responsible for these financial minimums, which it's required to do, and that fits squarely within the savings clause. I invite the court's other questions at this time.
The only thing I have is it's kind of an odd record. We have a default judgment against the insured, and there isn't any, like, real proof of anything in the record as far as Malco's status vis-a-vis being insured or not insured or self-insured and all the rest of that. Could you comment on what is actually in the record that establishes the facts with respect to Malco's position?
Thank you, Your Honor. So first, I would point out that we're the appellee, so it's the appellant's burden to prove that. My understanding, based on my review of the record, is that they have a certificate of self-insurance that which they claim is just to self-insure their own negligence.
Criminal misconduct, yeah.
And that's their claim. Now, if you actually look at the statutes, that's not what it says. So if you look at 482.305, the very statute that Malco is trying to hold preempted here, that statute actually defines what it means for a rental car company to comply, and that's the word, to comply with the minimum insurance requirements and with the registration statute. And part of that compliance is that Malco, as a self-insurer, does have to cover state minimums just as any other insurer would. So if you look at the text of 482.305, which is a more recent statute than the rather odd chain of statutes that Malco would like for this court to go down, digging deep into the layers to try to find some reason why it gets a special privilege over other insurance companies. If you look at that, it makes sense that the more recent enactment would give more guidance than digging through some of a long chain of some of the older ones. So even though Malco, and my understanding is this is in the record, has that certificate of self-insurance, that doesn't prove that the driver was insured. And essentially what Malco is asking this court to hold is that it is free to put an unlimited number of practically uninsured drivers onto the road. It's free to do that, and there is no recourse for any accident victims. That's not what Representative Graves wanted. It's certainly not what the debates reflect. It goes against the plain language of the carve-out. It goes against the language of NRS 382.305, and it goes against common sense. If there are no further questions, I'll cede. Yes.
Justice Perry-Gary, do you have anything for this gentleman?
Yeah, I'm still concerned about applying the default judgment in this case. There's a lot of questions kind of left open. I think it's indicated that Sky had Malco, we don't know if they offered supplemental liability insurance, but she declined coverage. And I think our Hall decision addressed that particular instance, but I'm just concerned about applying this default judgment in this context.
Thank you, Your Honor. The only thing that is before the court now is Graves preemption. And why is that? That's because that's the only thing that Malco has chosen to preserve for appeal. I agree that potentially this could have been more thoroughly litigated below, but it's only a $37,000 case. And Malco is a what I assume is a strategic decision, only chose to preserve the Graves Amendment issue. And that's all they've raised here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I have another question. In the reply points in a or brief from the appellants at pages 17 through 19, they cite some unpublished district court decisions from the 8th Judicial District Court here in Clark County. And I'd like to get your comments on whether those cases are different, and if so, why or why not?
My understanding, based on the unpublished lower court cases, is that no, they're not any different than this one. It's just that the courts below have been divided both ways. As far as I know, among the plaintiffs bar that has been pursuing these, at this point, the 702 firm is really the only firm that's pushed a comprehensive understanding of what Representative Graves said during the debates and what he meant. So I believe there is considerable confusion in the lower courts, but I also believe that the language of the statute is very clear. And if you go with a plain language, so plaintiffs should prevail.
I haven't looked at them in any depth, but it strikes me that if you read 305 literally, it appears to impose automatic unlimited liability over and above the insurance minimums, if you just read it literally. And I don't know whether in those cases the judgments were bigger, so they went past the minimum limits, and they aren't under the self-insured kind of explanation you make in this case. Do you follow what I'm getting at?
Yes, I do. And so first, we've already discussed the gloss put on by the Stevens case from 2017, but more importantly, if you look textually at subsection B2, it's an exception. So there's a general rule set out in Section A. The general rule says no joint and several liability for car rental companies. But Section B, and specifically B2, puts out an exception where a state can impose joint and several liability to enforce its minimum insurance requirements. So theoretically, it would still fall within B2 if the state legislature made unlimited joint and several vicarious liability there under B2.
I mean, let's say the judgment in this case was $1 million and there was no, they didn't comply with the minimum insurance requirements, and their reading of the self-insured that it takes out the minimum, the statutory minimums, would say they didn't meet it, if you're correct. Would you then argue that the full million is triggered as a liability under our statute and exempt under subparagraph B2 of the Graves Amendment, or do you want to leave that question for another day?
I would leave the question for another day, but I will say that under a plain language reading, since we are within the scope of an exception, this is a time where the state can impose joint and several liability. And here's why. Because it's doing so essentially as a punishment for not complying with a requirement in order to be doing what a rental car company is doing. So because we're talking about imposing liability as a stick to make the car rental company comply and to ensure that it continues to comply moving forward, it is something that falls within that carve-out.
And do you think that would be consistent with the policy that animated the Graves Amendment?
I do, in that What Representative Graves and Representative Nadler and their back and forth wanted was to ensure that while as a general rule, we limit joint and several liability to keep down the cost to consumers, rental car companies do have to comply with state minimum insurance. And so if you have a bad apple that is not complying with that minimum insurance, it's okay at that point to rely on that carve out, that exception, for the state to get out the stick and to force that company through some means to come back within the fold and behave as an insurer should by doing the same thing that every other insurance company does, which is to provide those state minimums.
You know, if I may have one additional question for you. In those cases that analyze the financial responsibility terms as inducements as opposed to requirements.
Yes. So if you look at the Meyer case out of Minnesota, and if you look at some of the other cases, you'll see that those statutes had very specific inducement language, which was trying to get a rental car company to go above and beyond state minimums. So if you actually look at the Meyer case, the rental car company at the very start of that appeal deposits $60,000 with a clerk of court just to cover state minimums. And the only dispute is about whether a state can impose something beyond minimums.
Okay.
This is not a case where Nevada is trying to bait insurers into providing more than the minimum. It's just a case where we're trying to enforce the minimums like everyone else.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Great. Madam Clerk, 2 minutes. Maybe 2 minutes.
Thank you, Justice Stiglitz. Just briefly. Respondent cited to Lancer. They filed within less than 14 days a federal court decision back in 2012. Our position is that this is not relevant. And the reason being is because it entirely relies on Hall. And our position is post August 10th, 2005, Hall has been preempted. So this decision out of a Utah federal court that talks about strictly Nevada, I mean, this is a case of first impression here.
But, sir, if Hall had come up post Graves, how would you suggest we decide Hall?
If Hall had become post Graves,
yeah. It
would be entirely different because then Hall would have this case talking about preemption. In Hall, it didn't talk about a preemption. There was nothing to preempt. There was no federal law. What would you preempt in Hall? Hall was basically an interpretation of NRS 42.305 pre-Graves Amendment. This whole notion that this federal law where you have a subsection B and respondents basically say, hey, it's a back door to liability. It says what it says. No, it doesn't say that. Because if that was the case, you wouldn't have the Graves Amendment. It wouldn't be worth the paper it's written on. Why? Because the reason why is it prevents not just joint and several liability for subsection A, it prevents all liability when it involves the renter's negligence. Absolutely.
If you're representing that you're self-insured for the minimums when you file your certificate of self-insurance, the minimums are required to insure 20 and 25,000 without regard to fault. So as you're undertaking that insurance obligation when you say that. So you're trying to create that privilege of being self-insured and turning it into an exclusion from the minimums that nobody else has. You would say that rental car companies have an exclusion from providing minimum coverage that nobody else has, right?
The minimum financial responsibility, Justice Pickering, is in terms of what you're referring to. These vehicles, yes, they are self-insured. For whose negligence? If we're arguing this,
but insurance covers other people's negligence.
Not our position, not under Graves. If Graves Amendment doesn't exist, you are correct, 100%. But why? Why is it not so? Because you have a federal law that every single time, whether it was federal court, circuit court of appeals, or every single state Supreme Court in this United States, have heard the situation, this very case, they've ruled unanimously. There's no disagreement about that. Unanimously, without one published decision that respondents can refer to, what does it stand for? Federal law preempts state law. And furthermore, it goes further. It says you cannot use subsection B, which, by the way, the Brown decision talks about, as a backdoor to somehow hold the rental car companies liable automatically through financial responsibility laws. Otherwise, what's the purpose of having a Graves Amendment if every single time the rental car company, without no fault, has to pay 25, 50, 20, every single time, regardless of automatic, strict vicarious liability? That's not what the Graves Amendment says. That's our position, and it has been upheld. And quite frankly, the four district court cases, and we cite them, and I know they're unpublished and what have you, but they're four separate, unanimous. There is no confusion about these judges in district court about reading literally NRS 4.8.2.
Your position is this case is the outlier.
Our position is this case is very consistent with all that's been argued in district court, because I've argued those cases very meticulously. And furthermore, in one of the cases, Judge Gall dissects subsection B and writes an opinion, says this subsection does not mean what the plaintiffs are saying, because if it did, why even have a Graves Amendment? It is being used as a backdoor. What's the backdoor? To make sure that rental car companies are liable for each and every accident, regardless of fault, which is, by the way, in direct contravention of federal law. If federal law is not in place, we wouldn't be here, Justice Pickering, 100%. We're only here
up to the minimums.
Up to the minimums. Okay. So the issue with up to the minimums you talk about, the position of respondents is, look, yes, subsection A says, you know, you guys are not liable for the vehicle's wreck. However, it doesn't matter whether you're liable or not, because I have a subsection B that says for every single accident regarding a fault, you got to pay up, period. That's not what subsection B said, because if it did, you wouldn't have a subsection A. Why even bother? Why even bother with a Graves Amendment? The reason why they put subsection B, as I argued earlier today, is why? We don't want to make sure that any ABC car rental company fly-by-night is not insured. Doesn't make sure that they're insured for their own employees, for their own negligence, for their own negligent maintenance and entrustment, not for vehicle renters' negligence, because if that was the case, why even bother with having a Graves Amendment? You wouldn't, and we wouldn't, quite frankly, we wouldn't be here but for 49 U.S.C. 30106. And the thing is, the Supremacy Clause outweighs and overrules and preempts all state laws, whether financial responsibility laws or vicarious liability, that seeks to hold Malcolm liable. It's that simple.
Thank you.
Anything further? Justice Paragier, you have anything further?
No, I don't.
All right.